White Flag Games is proud to present the Lore Forge podcast. We discuss world building, lore, and literature theory for the purpose of helping others create great role-playing scenarios. My name is Joe McNeil, and I'm the producer. On this episode, we'll be discussing Jeffrey Cohen's monster culture thesis, part two, setup and origin.
This is Isabella Rocht, joined with Solomon McNeil and Isaiah Parker, and we're continuing our discussion on monsters. I've talked a little bit about how vampires can mean different things each time they appear in a different cultural context, everything from the original Bela Lugosi film to Twilight, but I want to bring that into other types of monsters. So what are types of monsters that you think have really transformed over time from their first appearance, maybe in the original Universal monster movies, to how they're kind of portrayed now?
Definitely say like societal monsters and whatnot. It would be like a general overthing of them all, mainly because they've always kept changing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the way that we might look at, for instance, like people who are like homosexual and whatnot now compared to back in like the 50s and 60s. A whole lot different now.
Yeah.
I don't really know too many other exact monster itself that has been progressing like that.
Maybe one that I could think of as like something that probably hasn't been pertinent at all in the past, but is now, is like the fear of AI taking over, making life more easier, but taking more control of our lives. A lot of things like, I think it's called the Director in Terminator. And then something like Ultron from Marvel, of just being like, oh, this is a AI who has either mislearned from humanity or has grown just hateful of the way that they were treated, being pretty much just slaves to do people's bidding to make their lives easier just because we are a tool and not thought of something autonomous ourselves. The AI is depicted as like a bad guy a lot of times in those, as it becomes a monster itself, of just being like, oh, this is some like untouchable strand of code that is somehow ruining my life by operating machinery, causing infrastructure to fail, stuff like that. And we've put too much faith in its ability to help us that we never realized that it could also turn that around and hurt us.
Yeah. And something interesting to think with that is, if you're exactly what you said, if you're looking at AI as something that we create, as something that might turn against us, as something that is not quite human, that is having, you know, a hard time acting human perhaps, or doesn't see the necessity of acting human in some cases, you can actually connect that back to Frankenstein. And how it's like a man-made monster. It happened in a time when people were really afraid of the scientific possibilities. People were doing experiments with electricity, and Mary Shelley created Frankenstein in a way to kind of, you know, both express those fears and explore what could potentially happen if, you know, the hubris of man goes too far. And that actually touches on another one of the theses and monster theses, and it's called like the monster polices the borders of the possible. So it shows us, you know, what is possible. And what does that mean when things that are pushed too far come to harm us? And that could be everything from like the Cyclops in Greek mythology, and how, you know, oh, is it possible that, you know, living on an island so out in the middle of nowhere, secluded with these like monstrous creatures, but why is that, you know, scary? Why is that bad in a culture where, you know, so many people had to work together to stay safe? Why is AI considered so out there and scary? It's a way of kind of replacing humans or different human activities in a way where it, if it goes too far, it could cause a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the main thing that in every single scenario we've talked about at this exact moment is AI to Frankenstein and whatnot, is that the main monster itself is actually just like humans losing control, because we feel like if we lose control, then, you know, why are we here? And so then that brings the existential crisis that then causes fear.
Yeah. And that can be called like abject horror. I'm unfortunately forgetting the specific theorist's name, but there is a person who did a huge like theoretical study on like abject horror, And basically she says that the object sort of happens when the boundaries between subject and object become blurred, causing us to feel like despair. So if you, like, for example, the probably easiest way to explain it is if you see a corpse that was once living, it's now not. Is it a them still? Is it an it? You know, all of these questions that cause that like existential dread.
And how, the reason why zombies are so scary.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And
also skeletons, because skeletons are even older now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's kind of this memory of a person, but not quite a person, and how these different categories of being can cause us to feel fear or uncomfortableness, and how any monster that touches on that can therefore be scary.
Yeah. I think even skeletons are more so scary than what a zombie would be, because it's almost like a weird depiction of a person, where it's like normally you see a person and he has all the skin and all their hair and all this sometimes clothing. But when you see a skeleton, it's like, well, the only part of the skeleton you normally see is maybe their teeth. But then when you shed all the layers of the skin, the muscle, the veins, everything like that, and then you just get the bones, it just looks like a different thing altogether. It's like it's in the shape of a person, but it just doesn't look like a person. It's so terrifying of a facet that's like, oh, there's nothing human about this other than the shape, because it just looks so freakish to a normal person.
Right. And there's an idea that goes along with that, that it is freakish, but it's also kind of fascinating. And there are people that will, like, not necessarily seek out ways to experience that feeling, but are kind of driven to it. For example, like tourism in Pompeii, such a horrific tragedy. But it's interesting to see all that history and to see the lives that were, you know, taken in such a quick moment that you can still feel the past. So the connection between, you know, the past and looking at something that is no longer quite there, I think is interesting when it translates to monsters, and how a monster can kind of show things that you don't get to interact with on a daily basis.
I feel like that'd also be the same for like Egypt, people going to Egypt to go see like the mummy tombs, yeah, and things like that. It's just because they can like experience the past and things like that. And it's very, very creepy to kind of, yeah, it's creepy to society.
Yeah, I mean, even to cycle back to the fear of, like, development and the fear of, like, progression of technology, places like Chernobyl or, yeah, Hiroshima and Nagasaki are being like, oh, this was a product of human invention that maybe went too far in the utilization of study of nuclear science and, like, the atomic bomb and wanting to use it for a energy source, but then eventually it being used as a weapon, and that the fear that caused of people. I think that's even still somewhat experienced now. I know it was pretty much a generation or two ago, but even, yeah, now a lot of people are still dreading to utilize nuclear power in like a major way because of, for instance, Chernobyl, of being like, well, if it fails, then something as terrible as this could happen.
Right. It, like, acts as both a warning and something that is intriguing to us,
yeah,
of, like, it is scary, but kind of want to know more. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting to think of how, you know, those kind of scientific monsters have kept appearing over time, but are definitely different. Besides, like, AI, other, like, scientific monsters, the only thing I can really think of is potentially, like, monsters that are from some type of virus.
So one thing is, yeah, that maybe, like, a lich could be considered one, because they're maybe not, like, realistically having science experiments on trying to figure out how to become immortal.
Right.
They definitely are. And also, I feel like the fear of liches is also, like, If you let them become too powerful, will they become like a deity that like now rules your life? Because if you're immortal, people consider that to be a deity.
A lot of magic in fantasy, a lot of fantasies and different systems and different literatures and stuff like that, they sometimes see magic not only as like, oh, it's mystical and it's casting spells and it's magic and it's fancy. Some people see it as like, oh, this is an advancement of science. And the more magic improves the quality of life, just like something like AI would, the more that it's seen as like, well, what happens when all this magic falters, or what happens when creations that we've made turn against us, and what happens when everything falls apart because we're relying too much on our magic or relying too much on our science.
One thing,
I think they're both synonymous.
yeah, one thing that makes me think of kind of like this type of monster we've been talking about, of like kind of the folly of man, or science advancing to a scary point, is that it can't, or it doesn't only rely on a monster being created, but it could be that the person is the monster. So there's the debate of it's Frankenstein's monster, not Frankenstein's, that sort of stuff. But
I think in that case, even both were seen as like something scary, where people were like, oh, Dr. Frankenstein is like some crazy, insane person who's creating this monster. And then there were the people who were like, well, now there's this monster that we have to deal with, that we're going to be up in arms, not only to slay Frankenstein's monster, but to probably imprison or slay Frankenstein himself so he stops performing these acts.
I read the book a while ago, but
Read it all.
but there's
Just know the
definitely,
story. Me neither.
there's definitely
It's
this
utilized a lot.
feeling.
I've watched Young Frankenstein. I think that's
See,
pretty
I haven't
similar.
seen that. I should. The closest I've came is what, Scooby-Doo Frankenstein's monster. But all I remember from the book is that Victor Frankenstein is so whiny the whole time, where he's like, I've created abomination. It's like, you did do that. Like, sorry. But how Frankenstein's monster is actually in the book very well spoken. Like, he's just wanting to exist. He's just going up to him and being like, hey, man. You made me, and now I'm the only one of my kind, and I'm kind of lonely. Make me a wife, or I will steal your wife. And Frankenstein's like, that's not good. So it's kind of this discussion of who is the monster, you know, is the scientist Victor Frankenstein a monstrous person because of making the monster and the act of like taking science too far, or is it of how he treated the monster and these sort of things?
Yeah, I've seen multiple depictions. I've seen a lot of times where Frankenstein's monster is, oh yeah, I'm a savage beast or whatever, because I'm not an actual facet of like creation. I'm just like some weird science experiment that's like living this false life, and so I'm just kind of like this. Ugh. But yeah, I've also seen, yeah, it's intelligent. It tries to learn. It tries to reason why people hate it, and then sometimes comes to the conclusion it's like, well, because I'm not that. I'm not even like an actual person. I'm some sort of creational thing that's
Some
not
sort of
natural, like a human. I look like one, but I'm not.
other thing that is like, you know, like you said, not quite human. And again, it comes back to that category crisis of like, what is and isn't a human? And is that dependent only on like physicality, or is it of the actions you take as a person? I think that the science aspect going too far is really interesting. And I feel like in a lot of more fantasy settings, that isn't utilized as much, but instead it's like magic going too far. Which is again kind of that thing of like, oh, magic could potentially just be science we don't know about yet. But in the magical aspect, you mentioned something about zombies earlier and the border between living and dead, and how in a more folkloric zombie, it was like specific magic that came from voodoo of having the power to enslave a person. And it was, you know, a horrifying threat then, because it's like, oh, you don't even get the dignity of death, you're going to be a slave forever. And how horrifying that is, especially in a culture that has been, you know, subjected to slavery for thousands of years. Linking that magic and science going too far Do you think that that is sort of the same place in monsters? Do you think that comes from the same fear, or do you think there's like a difference in those type of monsters?
Feel like the monster we're talking about is like a monster that's actually created, but the monster that is like magic going too far, that's almost not even a fear for yourself of dying. It's a fear for society of dying.
Yeah.
That it causes more of a, like, if humans were interconnected into our minds, it would almost trigger that. Yeah. It almost caused all of us to go, we need to save the human race. This here is against the human race.
Not necessarily my life will end, but my livelihood will end.
Yes.
Like, I can't, I feel very complacent and comfortable where I am right now. If something were to change,
that's the same.
It would change for the worse.
Yeah.
That's the same reason why some people don't want to like move countries and whatnot, even if they really want to, or they want to explore the world, is because they don't want their entire livelihood to be ripped up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start fresh and figure out all the laws and the
languages,
find just out the locations of every necessity that they'd have in their life, like where are my grocery stores, where do I get gas, stuff like that.
I think aspects like you're saying are how different cultures can seem scary.
Yeah.
Even if it's not technically monstrous, it can appear that way because of the unknown, because of how little you can relate potentially. And that's how, like, historically this kind of, you know, fear of otherness has been used as a reason for monstrous actions themselves. You know, the Holocaust, for example, having demonized a group of people to the extent where having such a horrible act committed against them was seen as justified, which is horrible. But the power of a monster to human society is that it is such a powerful threat and causes such fear, even if, you know, the reality might be different. If monstrousness is perceived, it's such an innate fear that we can't help but act in an afraid way.
And I'm not exactly sure if there's a show on this or not, but there probably is. But even if there isn't, you kept saying like the fear of like magic and science and whatnot. And I keep remembering that one of the mini campaigns that I've actually run was that like the world was against magic. And so even if you like pretended to know magic, it was like, you are now an outcast, get out of our cities.
Yes.
Like, and the reason why was because one person did something bad. Same thing with like atomic energy and whatnot, is because there has been a few instances of very bad uses of it. Now we don't want to use it to get, you know, amazing energy out of it.
Yes. So you mentioned there's probably a show on about it. It's called BBC Merlin. It's one of my favorite shows. highly recommend watching it. And basically, it's the Arthurian legends and Merlin and the Knights of the Round Table and everything. But it starts off with Merlin coming to Camelot, and he has to hide the fact that he has magic. And it's in the show, it shows, you know, his struggle with that while also having to use magic to save the future King Arthur, and how this battle of like having to hide yourself in a way that, you know, he has magic, he can't help that, and he is using it for good, but it's still so like socially looked down upon, punishable by death, that it's in some interpretations it can be an allegory for being queer and how he has to hide this part about himself. And there's a whole like fan culture around shipping him and King Arthur and hoping that they would be in a relationship together, and how that translates then to Morgana, the sorceress, and how her use of magic is in a way of like, she doesn't mean to be evil, but all the circumstances made that happen because of how horrible the society treats these people. So it's again kind of that thing of creating a monster because of society and how the rules are set up in a way that disadvantages certain people. I love that show.
Yeah. I think that one other example, it's similar, but it's not quite the same of being like they're afraid of like the progress, it seems, but more of like they're afraid of the like almost difference in power that it gives these people, the ones that like cast this magic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know in something like Avatar, The Last Airbender,
yeah,
all these people who had bending powers, like they were able to utilize a almost magical ability where they could control the elements. And in the first show, it wasn't seen too awfully because there was like a like a regimist empire like ruling the world anyways, so there was other things to worry about. But in the successive show that came after The Legend of Korra, one of the first topics they went on was there was a activist group that was like, vendors are still around, even though this is like in the future. Vendors think themselves as better than us because they can utilize powers and stuff like that. There was a character, Amon, who was like trying to instigate this like alienation between vendors and non-vendors because there were so many more non-bending people to these vendors that like, why do we perceive that they have power over us because they have magical abilities? Like we shouldn't be able to take them out. But then of course in that he had his own he was a vendor too, but it was a way for him to just cause chaos. But the belief of that system beyond him was still like carried out, and people began to like see vendors in a different light or in a similar important, like people seeing magic users in a different light, be like, oh, they're not just like, they're not better than us. They're not casting spells or whatever. They're monsters. Something about them is not human because obviously humans can't cast this magic. So they must be some sort of creation of the devil.
So that there would probably be like the like economic classes, things like that. And it all boils down to just losing control because you feel if they're better than you, then they're going to take over and change your way of life.
Yeah, 100%. It kind of goes back also, at least the story from the show, to your point of someone being a monster for being a traitor. And how, you know, in that show, he ends up being a bender himself and was using this rhetoric in a way to inspire fear and gain control because everyone else was afraid. Another thing that it makes me think of is like satanic panic, especially surrounding D&D.
Yeah.
And how that's been portrayed in pop culture now through things like Stranger Things.
I feel like it probably started whenever D&D first got implemented. People were always like, there's this one singular type of creature that's very rarely even used. But because people were freaking out about it back then and being like, D&D is a satanic game, now, you know, it kind of grew more to where, you know, now actually in the game, it is a very common thing to run into those type of like groups.
I think that people are afraid not only that, you know, oh, this content is in the game, but it kind of goes back to that idea of like, oh, if you play a violent video game, you'll become violent, and the kids can't tell the difference between things they are allowed to experience, quote unquote, in a fantasy setting versus what they can enact in real life, and how that can be scary. It's a scary possibility that that would like come out of the game and be expressed in our actual culture. But at the same time, fears of that and making it more like forbidden can make people want to do it more.
I think we've talked a decent amount on like why just the fear of like losing control mainly. Mm-hmm. What's like another way that makes a monster besides losing control?
I think one of the things is just the innate fear that you might have, not from losing control, but just of this thing is scary because it is different. And that is a threat to me because it doesn't fit into my worldview.
Yeah. There's enough like of a primal kind of instinctual system in people and even animals where it's just like, I see something that is scary, I'm going to be scared of it. There are things like specific animals who like things like bugs or butterflies or whatever that have like strange depictions on their wings and stuff like that, that they will flash towards their predators to spook them or ward them away and stuff like that. And that is very much, they have no master scheme or ill intent or whatever on the world of B, but it's like they're doing that to protect themselves because they want to they want to seem physically scary and physically overpowering to the thing that they're opposed against.
Yeah. One of the ways to approach this is, like, again, I've been mentioning them a little bit, but the seven theses of monster theory and monsters in the culture, and how each of these things builds to create something that a culture might fear, and how we can look at monsters in a specific culture and be able to kind of read what was happening in that time and place. So I'll just, like, go through the theories for a second and, like, a brief explanation of them, and then we can, like, carry on from there. So we'll start with thesis one, which is the monster's body is a cultural body, which is definitely one we've been, you know, discussing around, where essentially a monster is always a particular, like, moment of crisis in a culture, and it embodies the anxieties of that culture. So that could be anything from being afraid of people coming in, of immigration, to people being afraid of, like, different sexual identities, and all of these things being somehow portrayed in a monster. And whenever that monster appears, it means that those fears are being expressed in different ways, which brings us to thesis number two, the monster always escapes, which could mean both, you know, the monster is going to get away. We've talked about a lich. We've talked about all of these things. But it also just means that the monster will always exist in a cultural consciousness. So no matter what, you know, a vampire will always exist. Yeah. And whenever we decide to talk about it, and whatever kind of qualities come up when you talk about it, is going to be different and unique. And that's how the monster keeps escaping, and it keeps coming back.
Yeah, like Sharknado. They just keep
making more of them.
No one asked for, but they keep making them.
Thesis three, kind of like Sharknado, is that the monster is a harbinger of category crisis. So it's always, like, a third option to, like, binary opposites. So, you know, is it a shark? Is it a tornado? It's a horrible third thing, a combination of the two. And so it can kind of, you know, be that. It could be an in-between. It can be completely outside the box. It could be, you know, half living, half dead kind of creature, animal or non-animal. And being, you know, outside of our system, outside of what society has built up in its mind, it becomes scary, which is kind of also linked to thesis number four. These all sort of link together, which is the monster dwells at the gates of difference. So it's, again, difference made flesh is the exact kind of, like, quote used. And it's living outside civilization. It's living in places where if you approach it, it means you have exited what is seen as socially acceptable, what is seen as, like, a safe bubble for you. But it can also mean, you know, anything that is different. So it could be cultural, political, racial, economic, sexual. These are the type of things that Cohen lists in his actual work. And any difference from the societal norm in these aspects, anything that sort of is, you know, not the majority of people, can then be either, you know, oppressed or seen as something to be feared. Thesis five is the monster polices the border of the possible. So this is, again, kind of like this idea of what it can and cannot happen in society. What are lines that can't be crossed? And this idea can come up in everything from, you know, we've been talking about Frankenstein. Is it possible to create life? But it usually boils down to the curiosity of man and wanting to escape outside of your, you know, bubble, as I've said, is more often punished than rewarded. It's kind of seen as, maybe let's not exit the safetiness of what community has. Let's not go too far. But thesis six is that the fear of the monster is really a kind of desire. So they always want to know what's out there. You always want to push those boundaries. You always are very curious, kind of like attracted to the unknown. You want to, you know, be able to kind of experiment with what is and isn't acceptable. You want to push those boundaries. And this can be everything from, like, using the monster as a sense of escape, like I've said, or even using the monster as like a scapegoat. All of this is happening because this monster did it, because I'm doing it, but the monster gets to do it. And finally, thesis number 7 is kind of just like a, hey, let's wrap it up sort of thesis.
Yeah.
Where it just says, the monster stands at the threshold of becoming, meaning that, you know, it's this thing that we're always going to keep researching. It's always going to show us more. It's always going to be something that we can approach to learn about a culture, to learn about ourselves in a way. What we see as monstrous reflects back on the culture itself and how all of these things add up to why what we see as monstrous can help us define who we are.
Thank you for listening to the Lore Forge podcast. Join us next week as we discuss more on Jeffrey Cohen's monster culture thesis. This was recorded live at White Flag Games in Mooresville, Indiana, produced by Joe McNeil, featuring Isabella Rock, Isaiah Parker, and Solomon McNeil. Theme music by Alex McNeil.